This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
The human-animal bond has led to tremendous advances in pet care. There are times, however, when this bond can become pathological, detrimental to the pet and the person. An example is when a pet is separated from their humans. They can have panic attacks, separation anxiety. The corona pandemic is an unprecedented situation, forcing us to be home 24/7. Our pets are loving the attention. There are no excuses why you can't go for a walk four times a day. A third brushing for your cat? No problem. Extra playtime? My pleasure. But what happens when we're finally able to get out and about? I suspect our pets are not going to adjust well. And it just isn't this pandemic. Kids heading off to school after summer break, starting a new job that requires you to be gone for more hours than your old job, can trigger anxiety in your cat or dog. There are ways to still be close to your pet, but ensure they will confidently handle your absence when the time comes. My guest is Dr. Gary Landsberg. He is both an American and European board-certified veterinary behaviorist. He has a behavioral clinical practice in Toronto, Canada. Dr. Landsberg is an award-winning consultant, author, and international lecturer. He is also a member of the Executive Council of the Fear Free Initiative. We'll be right back after the short break.
DINOVITE.com.
When we put him on the Dynavite, he took right to it. All of these symptoms disappeared.
Dynavite is nutrition.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Something that he actually likes to eat. You need to put him on Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
If you love your dog, you don't just want him healthy, you want him to be happy.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Landsberg, thank you for once again being a guest, because as I said, these are unprecedented times and I know my cats are loving me being home, but I'm afraid what's going to happen when I'm gone.
Well, that's certainly an issue to consider. But also enjoy the time together. I'm saying that to you and to your cats, because this is a chance for us to use our pets and work with our pets to maintain our bond and our physical and emotional health, to maintain their physical and emotional health. We just have to be careful about the overdoing it, giving them a routine that we're not going to be able to keep up later on, and perhaps even giving them more than they want. We may want it, but maybe they don't. So reading and recognizing their needs, their behaviors, having a routine, using reward training, accidentally ended up with three different R's there. So reading and recognizing, routine and reward training are really important. And another key word is independence, giving them or teaching them independence, especially for those pets that are prone to separation distress, separation anxiety. Those pets most likely will have problems again when you go back, and you'll have to a more normal routine, and you'll have to deal with it as you have been in the past with a trainer, with a behaviorist, with proper program. But we don't want it to happen to the same degree in pets that don't already have separation distress or anxiety. There are preventive measures we should have in place for the wellness of our pets and for getting back to a normal routine at some point in the hopefully not too distant future.
Hopefully. So you keep mentioning separation distress or anxiety. Can you really define that for us? Because, you know, person goes in the old days, BC, before corona, you'd go to work, you'd come home and your pet, oh my goodness, they were just so happy to see you. And they were just wagging their tail and they were barking and they were carrying on. It's like, oh, that makes you feel so good that your pet really loves you. Or when you leave, you know, they're barking and carrying on because, oh, they really love me. Is that really love or is that some of the issue?
Well, I mean, they're excited to see you. They have a bond with you. You're home. Of course, that type of greeting could be normal for any pet, whether they're distressed when you leave or not distressed when you leave. I'll oversimplify it, so these aren't diagnostic terms, but I can put it into three categories. Those pets that greet you in that way are really happy to see you and glad that you're home, may be absolutely fine when you're out, may have no problems, may be, quote unquote, in human terms, missing you a little bit or missing the attention or exercise or activity, but they're managing fine to be on their own for several hours. And that time varies. There are some pets that can handle only 3 or 4 hours. So that's where you get a dog walker or somebody comes home midday. Then we have a second group of pets that need more activity, that their routine is not to be alone for 4, 6, 8 hours, even 2 or 3 hours. They have a little more activity level. They have a little bit, you might use the word more hyper or more needs. And those pets may start to get into, I'll use a human term, mischief while you're out, doing things that they might enjoy doing or occupy their time, but we don't enjoy them doing, such as chewing on things, tearing things apart, raiding the garbage, activities that are quote unquote normal dog activities to occupy time, but undesirable for us. Those pets may have no anxiety or minimal anxiety, I should say, maybe a little stressed about the amount of time they're alone. And those ones can be managed too if we do an appropriate routine, appropriate training now. And some of those dogs don't mind being left alone at all. The third group, and again, this is a broad term for what might be multiple different scenarios, but the pets who have problems being separated from either family members or an individual in the family. And they are distressed by that. They are used to having companionship, and the actual physical separation from the owner leads to distress and anxiety. And those signs may range from the extremes that we notice, such as salivation, destructiveness, especially at doorways and exit points. Of course, that could be due to other causes, such as hearing noises outside or somebody coming to your door. Vocalization, which is more of a distress type of vocalization, and maybe defecation, urination. Some or all of those signs may be anxiety related. And to tell you the truth, the best way to determine what might be the cause of those signs is with videotape or video monitoring or web monitoring, so you can see if this is a pet who's occupying its time in an unfavorable way for you, or whether the pet is distressed while you're going out. The warning here, however, is that it may vary in intensity between pets. The signs may vary between pets. And the last one is that some pets show distress by passive behaviors, cowering, hiding in a corner, seeking shelter, not moving, not eating. In other words, they may have a much more passive response, but still be very anxious. So hopefully they would engage with some toys, some treats, some activities that you leave for them while you're out.
Dr. Landsberg, is this a phenomenon that we see more in dogs or cats? You know, when coming into my practice and talking to my clients, it seems as though I hear about this so much more in dog owners, from dog owners. But I know there are people that have cats that are very dog-like, if you want to call it that, in their behavior, how they're very attached and almost like the Velcro dog that wherever you go, this, you know, now the cat does the same thing. So which one do you see more?
Well, it's hard to generalize because then I'll criticize for the exceptions to the rule or the ones that are in the minority. But cats are probably in general terms, again, like you said, there are Velcro cats and cats that really want to be with you and are distressed by being separated from family members. But cats are fairly secure in their environment with their smells, with their homes and their routines. And if you provide for a cat's needs, many of them, even when you're home, will spend a fair amount of time on their own. Some of them will spend time with you when you're home in large amounts, but still feel pretty secure and comfortable on their own when you're out. So you're likely to see it far less in cats who, if they're used to their environment, secure in their environment, and have all of their needs met, both while you're out and while you're at home, probably a much lower percentage of cats that would show signs of separation anxiety. But at the other extreme, there are probably cats that are anxious about your departure and show relatively passive signs, mild signs, even though they might be moderately to severely distressed. That might include missing their litter box or urine marking, but it might also include hiding, cowering, staying in shelter and not eating the whole time that you're out, or engaging in toys or food. So I think it's far less likely in cats, but it might also be underdiagnosed in those cats that do have the problem.
Is this a new phenomenon? Because I've been a veterinarian now for over 20 years, and I honestly, either I missed it when I was first out in practice, didn't see it, but it seems as though I'm learning so much more about it, seeing it so much more in my pets that are coming through the door.
I don't think we have the answer to that I can give you definitively, but I can give you my impressions that, number one, our relationships with animals and the way we interact with animals, the bond we have with animals, the routine and interactions we have in animals may be contributing more to the problem, because we are interacting in a good way, in a very positive social way with our pets, but they're not getting the independence time, the time to get used to being on their own, perhaps, and that would be a contributory factor. We do have some data. There has been more than one study to show that some separation from your new puppy, maybe in gradual small amounts when you get a puppy, can get them used to spending some time on their own and giving them a secure place to spend some time away from you. Exposing them to more noises and sounds and stimuli can make them less fearful later in life. So that certainly we may be contributing to part of it in the way we manage and maybe overspend time and not teaching them the routine from the start. There's probably genetic factors involved. There's social factors involved in our scheduling. So I think we're seeing more of it. And part of that may be relationships. Part of it may be genetics. Part of it is certainly the environment they grow up in and the way we train our dogs.
I love the way that you're saying sometimes they need to be away from us a little bit. It's like having that human child. If they're with mom and dad 24/7 and the first time they go to preschool and they have an absolute meltdown because they just can't handle not being with, you know, mommy. And it's like, you just feel so badly. And I'm watching these people, as in the old days, BC, when I would be going to some of the big box stores or going to home improvement stores, people will have their big dog, little dog. And sometimes I know they're therapy or support dogs, but I don't think there's that many that are out there. But they're in the little cart and they're, you know, being with them all the time. It's like, really? Does your pet really want to be here right now? Just let it build up some of that confidence and stay home.
Yeah, I think when we say they need it, they need to learn it. Some of them may be very happy with being with you 24/7 and interacting with you. But as you said, they need to learn some independence. They need to learn some time on their own. There are genetic differences in individuals. There are differences related to their early upbringing. But I do think it's something they need to learn. I think if you think of a similar human example of a child perhaps being with their parents, don't get a babysitter, don't go out that often for a variety of reasons, whether it's financial, whether it's emotional, whether it's the bond, and then them going off to school for the first time when they're 4 or 5 years of age, as opposed to a child who's been to a variety of daycares and other child classes and social groups, etc., who's gradually gotten used to learning to spend some time on their own. I'm not trying to give a direct analogy here, but I am trying to point out that's important to learn how to spend your own time on your own, engaging in your own activities and feeling comfortable on your own.
So are there things that a pet owner can do? So I am home now 24/7 with my animals. I am so happy I have my two cats because they're helping me keep my sanity right now. But what can I do as, let's start off with a cat owner? what can I do so when I finally am able to get out, these animals aren't stressed? I'm in the house. How can I say you're in another room? Do I close myself in the bathroom and just sit there with my computer?
I think that, and in this part, I could probably combine dogs and cats. The goal is to have some level of routine, recognizing that you're going to provide for all of their needs, maybe more than they had in the past as far as social interactions and some of the other activities. You can do some reward training with them. It's a great opportunity to do that so that each treat or piece of food that they get outside of what they're getting in their food bowl, they learn a new behavior. You can communicate with them. And then when you give them food, play toys, feeding toys, mind games, other forms of stimulation, resting areas, you can do it away from you, whether it's the other side of the room, whether it's you leaving the room or going out shortly for that little walk you were going to go on. If it's a cat, you probably wouldn't take it with you or necessarily take it with you. And if your pet is prone to the problems, maybe even forcing that few walks with the pet, if it's a dog, and one or two without, or a little car ride around the neighborhood, getting it used to being on its own. But going back to the being at home part of it, this is where you've spent some time with the pet, you've provided for their needs, you've done the social play, you've done some training, and now maybe it's time to transition into, well, this is when I would normally be out, so let's get the pet to its sleeping area, to get it to its little bed or safe haven, to, if it's a dog or cat, perhaps train it to gradually relax there longer and longer for treats. And we should be talking about mental exercise, feeding toys, and brain games. And these are the types of things you can give them to occupy themselves while you walk away. So rather than giving food in a food bowl, what about giving food in an egg carton, food in a toy that's meant to deliver food as it's wobbled around or chewed around? You can do chewed on. You can do some homemade toys like plastic bottles with treats inside them, or food inside, so the pet has to manipulate it. And while they're busy doing that and exercising their brain and working for their food, you can let them spend time on their own, either across the room, out of the room, or even going for a short walk.
That's a great idea, because I was just thinking, you want to have a feeding toy. You mentioned it, and those little brain toys are fabulous. But unless you have Amazon or some way for them to deliver it, if you never had one of those, what can you do? And you say, yes, you know, I can make a toy myself. So a little separation is good. So Dr. Landsberg, we're going to have a little separation right now, you and I. We're going to break for a short commercial, and we're going to be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hey everyone, Michelle Fern here. I have the perfect gift for Mother's Day. You know, I can't visit my mother-in-law as much as I'd like to, and that's why I love the Skylight Frame. It's a touchscreen photo frame that you can email photos to, and they appear in seconds, so my mother-in-law can see the pictures right away. And I have a great savings for you. Just go to skylightframe.com/pet and you'll save $10. That's right, skylightframe.com/pet, P-E-T, and you'll save $10. And get ready to receive sheer happiness thank yous from your recipient, because they will love this.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Landsberg, before this break, you were talking a little bit about sometimes it may be genetics. Are there certain breeds of dogs, because it seems to be more obvious in dogs, I think, than cats, that are more genetically prone to having separation anxiety, having these panic attacks?
I think there are genetic components, and it may be within breeds and within certain lines, but we then can modify and shape the behavior by training, early interaction, socialization, teaching them some independence, reward training, so that there are genetic factors in a lot of problems that develop. But I don't think specifically for separation anxiety, we can target a specific breed or a specific line. although there was a huge Finnish study just recently of about 14,000, 15,000 animals, dogs looking at their behavior problems. Fear and anxiety was seen in, well, I think it was over 70% of the dogs in that study. Separation anxiety in maybe 5%, and some people range, some studies have ranged up to 20%. Noise, phobias and aversions. And there were some breed prevalences in those different anxieties and fears, although they would have been related to the Finnish population of dogs that the study was done in, because certainly the lines differ and even breeds differ from one country to another. I have a colleague in Australia, and we'll talk about a specific behavioral issue or a specific even medical problem that we're seeing in a certain breed. And she'll say, oh, we don't see that in that breed here. We see it in this breed more than another. So it also shows you that the genetic lines within the breeds, as opposed to the breeds themselves, may contribute. All we can do, though, is when we have a dog, give them the environment that supports providing for their needs, training what we want them to learn, and preventing behavioral issues and behavior problems, reducing their fear and anxiety by treating them properly. By the way, another issue that I meant to bring up when you asked about an increase in problems now compared to previously, it may also be the human emotion that's changing. Human emotional needs, human requirements, human health and mental health. And the pet becomes an important bond, an important emotional need, but are we therefore then increasing that attachment beyond what would be a normal or an acceptable level? So people are changing too in their needs and their relationships with their pet, and that affects how pets react and interact. Back to one other thing too that we hadn't quite finished. You brought up the issue of mental games, brain mm-hmm. toys, and so did I, and trying to do it independent from the owners, because that would be something they don't need you for. The reward training and treats, yes, but even then you can shape longer and longer relaxation, longer and longer time away from you, longer and longer distances, so first farther away and then out of the room. But a lot of these pets would be happy to engage while you're away, or and away may just be out of the room or out of the house. So some people will do something like scatter feeding, which is just if the pet is still allowed outside and depending on your environment, or it can be done in a room, just scattering the food so that they have to sniff around and find it. Hide and seek games where you hold them in place or maintain them in place and then release them to find the food that you've hidden in different toys or in different spots in the house. There are snuffle mats for dogs you can make yourself where the dogs have to sniff through them to be able to find the little treats inside. And depending on your pet's size and shape and safety, you can use empty containers. I saw a colleague in Turkey where I actually just spoke recently, and she talked about, quite rightly, and maybe it wasn't her own personal idea, but she posted it, about the number one thing that might be available in your home, apparently, for toys would be toilet paper rolls nowadays. So why not
use those? Those are really precious, yes.
Yes, so why not use the leftover rolls at the end of your paper towels and toilet papers as toys, especially maybe for cats who would be able to knock the food around or seek the food in there that you've hidden in there if you attach those little rolls together. A lot of this is available on the web. This is a good time to search the internet for dog training tips. If you've got a new puppy, what you can do for dog socialization. A couple of my behaviorist colleagues have great sites. And I can tell you that one of the best resources, and I am affiliated with them as head of the research, is Fear Free Happy Homes. They are always adding new resources to their sites. So if you go through into Fear Free Happy Homes, the articles, first of all, the sign up is free. The articles are available there. And I just saw they posted something on brain games for pets the other day, on separation for pets. So some really good blogs and information if you go to Fear Free Happy Homes.
I think that is marvelous. You were talking about puppies, and this is a time where a lot of people, yes, are home. The shelters desperately need fostering. And before we went on air, we were talking a little bit about adopting these animals, or at least fostering these animals. It's not perfect because we can't get them out to socialize. But what are your views about bringing them into the home and things that we can do to try to optimize the socialization so we don't have problems with them?
Well, the socialization for shelter dogs is in some ways less of an issue as long as you provide for all of their needs, because we can still expose them when we get them with treats and rewards and positive outcomes to noises, to the environment, maybe through walks if it's safe, maybe through car rides around the neighborhood, through your front window. You can play sounds on the TV. You can make different sounds around the house. So we can expose them to everything other than unfamiliar people. And that we probably could do, as I said, through windows, through cars, or on socially distanced walks by giving them little treats as they pass and a little greeting. The biggest problem would be that social interaction with people. But again, if you're dealing with dogs who are already grown up, you know, older puppies, adults, they've had dog-dog interactions, some at least. They've had some human-dog interactions. So it's really perhaps less of an issue as long as you meet these needs and understand them than it is for new puppies that you might be adopting, because new puppies need that dog-dog ongoing socialization, as well as the different environments, different sounds, different smells, different noises, and different people. And that makes it much more challenging for a new puppy. I think if you are adopting a new puppy, you definitely should go online with whatever trainer you had intended to use, with some of the behaviorists who are actually providing online puppy socialization courses and advice. There's a book that Debbie Martin and Ken Martin have put together called Puppy Start Right. And you will be limited by the COVID situation, but do everything you can to provide the social exposure, not direct contact with humans. There might be some opportunities for social exposure with other dogs, at least at a distance, and definitely the environmental smells, noises, and sights, a variety, make it positive and provide for their needs. So yeah, you have to do a little bit more if you're adopting a dog now, but just remember not to socially isolate them entirely from all stimuli. There's lots of stimuli other than other people that you can be socializing with or exposing them to in a positive way.
Dr. Landsberg, you had mentioned trainers, and trainers hold a very important part in bringing up our pets, dogs and cats, and then there are behaviorists. When is a situation where a person should seek the services of a trainer versus a behaviorist? Because I'll have clients come in and they're mentioning they're having excessive barking issues or the separation anxiety issue. He said, well, my trainer says, it's like, I think you're beyond the point of a trainer. What are your views?
Well, at this time, there is far more overlap because some of the behaviorists are making puppy socialization courses, general behavioral guidance programs available online, so that they're going to provide some of the best advice that you possibly can get right now from an online standpoint. But in general terms, a trainer is what is who should help you guide how your dog can learn. Your dog can learn cues, can learn behaviors. You need to know timing. You need to know how to properly use rewards and to teach the dog and communicate with the dog in a way that it can be a good member of your household, a good member of society, and that you can, I'll use the phrase again, communicate properly with your dog, telling it what to do, not what not to do. Very important, therefore, to use positive reinforcement, force-free trainers in teaching and learning. When your pet has a behavior problem, a problem that either the trainer themselves says you need additional help, or in particular, fears, anxieties, and behaviors that are not normal, that are excessive, that are an extreme problem for the dog, for you, for the home, then you need the advice of a behaviorist to A, diagnose, who might tell you you need a really good trainer to help you do this, to tell you that there might be a medical problem going on, to tell you if the behavior is abnormal. And a behaviorist will not only diagnose, but give you a management program to prevent it from getting worse, a training program that you might do with a trainer, and in some cases, medications to help you reduce the fear, anxiety, stress, impulsivity that's underlying the problem, both to improve the problem as well as the welfare of the pet. In other words, the drugs might not make the pet better, but they'll make it mentally and emotionally feel better, and it may help it learn the new behaviors better. So there's a definitive role for a veterinary behaviorist when your pet has undesirable behaviors that are abnormal, that aren't just a matter of training the dog to do the behaviors you want it to do or the cat to learn. I think it's really important to separate the two, as you said, and your trainer, if it's a good trainer, will help you do that as well.
And through Fear Free, you'd mentioned that you're on the executive council for Fear Free. So Fear Free has a list of trainers that are Fear Free certified, correct?
Yes, I think that there's the Fear Free certified trainers. There are trainers who have been through, and definitely check the website and find those. There are trainers who have been through valuable, useful, and educational positive education training courses, such as Karen Pryor Academy and the ones that Jean Donaldson and Victoria Stilwell have developed. And there are fear-free veterinarians who are practicing in a positive, minimal stress environment to reduce fear, anxiety, and stress, to prevent fear, anxiety, and stress. And if you don't have a fear-free trainer that you can identify on the fear-free website in your area, then speak to your fear-free veterinarian or to your veterinarian about a trainer that meets those principles. They may not have taken the fear-free course. They may not have certified yet, but certainly the veterinarian should be your guidance as who would be the best trainer for you in the neighborhood. And some training can be done with online guidance. That's one area where you could, from a telemedicine standpoint, take a course or get some guidance from your trainer so that you can do those exact same things at home, maybe even tape or show the trainer what's going on with a one-on-one so that they can help guide you through it. So in summary, I think we need to provide pets for their needs, routine. They can have more walks, they can have more play, but use your rewards for training. Train the behaviors your pet needs to learn and communicate. Number two, we talked about using enrichment toys and keeping the mind busy. And that might be a time to do it away from you, separate from you, independent from you, if you could. And number three, we talked about giving that pet routine so that hopefully your routine of time alone or time away might not exactly match what you're going to have when you get back out into your work, school, or community service, but it will at least help them adapt to that schedule that you're going to maintain later on.
Dr. Landsberg, this is fabulous. It's just all the information that I need, everyone listening to this. So I need it for my own cats, people listening with their dogs and cats, and I have a feeling birds also. They need to have their routines. Probably our geckos and our snakes aren't really that aware of that we're home all the time now. But this has been extremely helpful. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Please listen again next week to The Pet Doctor. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.